Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. This week, I'm joined by newly announced candidate for governor, Deputy Senate Majority Leader John DeFrancisco, a Republican from New York's 50th District in the Syracuse area. Welcome, Senator. It's just a pleasure to have you with us.
Well, thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it.
John, tell us a little bit about yourself and the district you've been representing, and, you know, and a little about your values.
Well, first of all, I'm in the 50th Senate District, which is comprised of parts of most of Onondaga County and Cayuga County, which is right smack in central New York. And I've been involved in government for many years. I was on the school board. I was on city council, president of both of those bodies at one time or another. Then I was in Senate for the last 25 years. And as far as my other background, I went to Syracuse University. I got an engineering degree and then went on to Duke Law School and practiced law, first with a firm in New York City, Simpson, Thatcher, and Bartlett.
Yeah.
Then I went off to the military and was a judge advocate in the Air Force during the Vietnam era. And after that, I came back and practiced law for a while. But almost the whole time I practiced, I was in a position of government, one way or the other, from the school board to the present state Senate. And my values, tied into this, the reason I'm running is basically that I really believe that we have to have a state that really rewards responsibility and energy and industry, and I don't mean businesses, I mean people who want to be industrious, and we got to give people the opportunity and a hand up, not necessarily simply provide various benefits because maybe one group or another has requested it. And I think we've gotten away from that concept, which has led us to a $4.5 billion deficit and more people leaving the state than coming to it. And the reason I'm really running is we got to the point now that it's critical that we've got to live within our means. We've got to be very efficient and as to how we use our resources. Otherwise, we're going to lose more and more taxpayers, and it's going to be more and more difficult to provide for those truly in need. And so I just think we're getting far away from that, and that's why I decided to run.
I can't argue with anything that you're saying. However, look, the system seems to be a little bit stacked against you here. Think about this. You know, you got a lot of people in New York who really don't like Trump. So it's going to be a bit of a Trump reaction. We've seen that in the last election. We see that now. Your presumed opponent, but not absolutely, but your presumed opponent will be Andrew Cuomo, who has collected, I think, last time I looked, $30 million. Why do people give you $30 million to run except if they want to invest in you? So $30 million. How do you compete with that?
Well, first of all, you sort of hinted at one of the issues, and that is how do you get that $30 million? I'm sure based upon the governor's manner of doing business and his straight-on, hard-charging style that takes no prisoners, it certainly wasn't because they love him personally. I think that there's an investment. You put it that way, and you're absolutely right. And so that's got to be pointed out, and that could be a negative to a certain extent. But you obviously need funding to run commercials and to get out and about meeting the people. And I've been asked that several times, and really what I'm saying is that, you know, I could stay in my Senate Deputy Majority Leader spot for as long as I want it, but I'm giving it up because I don't think we should just say it's impossible, we're throwing up our hands, it's not going to be an elected governor anymore, it's going to be a monarch. I think it's important to have a two-party system, to have real debate and discussion during the course of a campaign, and that is something I'm going to do. And you never say never as far as these elections are concerned.
Sure.
I think George Pataki is a perfect example. I know it was a while back, but who in the heck knew who he was, let alone that he could beat an icon like Mario Cuomo? There's times in history where people just want to change, and I think this is that time. And it's not only the fact that people are leaving and those are concerned about what's going on in New York and how to afford living in New York, but and it's not only from the left, from the right or the center, it's from the left as well. Stephanie and Miner and I are good friends. We're both from the Syracuse area. And, you know, she's contemplating running for governor, a primary possibly. So there's dissatisfaction from all sides of the political spectrum, not only because of what's going on and what the priorities are, but also because of a certain way of doing business, the doing that Andrew Cuomo has. And I mentioned it before, it's full charge, full storm ahead, and then and take no prisoners. And, you know, you got to get along with somebody sometime in order to make progress in the right direction.
So, Senator, I guess I really want to ask you, because it's on everybody's mind. Kafka wrote a book called The Trial, and there's the trial right now, and that some of the governor's closest associates, the man he called his third brother, the one that Mario loved the most, Joe Prococo, is on trial, could be end up in prison for years. How does that affect this governor?
Well, I think it affects it greatly. Whether or not he's involved to an extent of criminality, that's nobody knows that. That may come out in the course of the trial. But if you've got your closest political ally that's on trial for taking bribes, and the governor says and wants people to believe that he knew nothing about it, and if you put on top of that the definite fact that the governor is a micromanager. And it seems very, very hard to put those two together and believe that he wouldn't know what his main source of political support was doing and being a micromanager. That's one point. So it damages him in that sense. There's an issue of credibility. Secondly, as this trial is unfolding, when there's evidence that Prococo was actually operating out of the governor's offices, at a time when he supposedly was not working for the governor anymore, and the now chief of staff was compiling names of individuals who were donors supposedly to be in a position to make sure there's no conflict, but that's out of the governor's office. You wonder whether or not there's more fire than smoke here. So it's damaging. Every day something comes out.
We're talking to Senator John DeFrancisco. Senator, the one thing that I've been sort of critical about the governor here is, hey, let's assume you didn't do anything criminal, but you're still supposed to be watching the store, watching what everybody else who's working for you is doing, right?
Absolutely. And especially since there was a video put out by Bill Samuels about the corruption. I'm not sure you saw it or not. But there's a video as part of his video where the governor is on a talk show, and they asked him, the reporter or the talk show host asked him, "Are you you're a micromanager, aren't you?" And he smiled. And he says, this was early on in his career, and he asked him again, "Oh, come on, you're a micromanager." And he says, "Guilty." Now, you can't be both. I mean, you simply can't be both, and you can't be a micromanager and not know what's happening. And anybody who knows how he operates knows that's the way he operates. So there's an issue of credibility here, too, as well.
Of course, I've already mentioned it, but Donald Trump is on the lips of many New Yorkers. So my question to you is, do you want to stay away from him? Is there a way to make it clear you're running in New York, not the federal, or are you a big admirer of his?
Well, I believe that the president of the United States, I think there's going to be less hostility as time goes on in view of these tax changes. I know it doesn't help New York as much as other states, but I think that that is going to change over time. Whether it changes quickly enough not to affect this race, I don't know. I'm a Republican. I support my party candidates. I don't support many of the tweets and the manner of speaking that I see from the governor, but the only thing I can mention is that, you know, you can't be painted with a broad brush, that just because somebody that you have supported did something wrong or does something that people don't like, and then say, I'm running away from that person. You just have to show what your positions are on your various issues. And if you could contrast that to Governor Cuomo, his whole state of the state and budget message was blasting the Congress and blasting the Trump administration, to take advantage of that dislike for Trump in the state of New York by some. In addition, if you're the governor of the state of New York, okay, you may want to play politics and gin up that emotion that you believe is out there against the current administration at the federal level. But on the other hand, you got to do things that you can do from a governmental standpoint to try to make compensation for whatever you think has been done wrong in the new tax code in the federal tax reform. And the perfect example of that is the Senate passed a bill, and the bill basically was a bill that decoupled the federal and state tax returns, because we get our deductions based upon what the federal deductions are. And nothing was mentioned in his State of the State or even his budget presentation about that, because I don't know why, but it seems to me that if you want to do something about it, you don't want those lesser deductions on your state tax return. And that's what would have happened if you don't correct that. And it would have meant $1.5 billion in more taxes paid by the state taxpayer, because our tax returns are tied into federal deductions. Now, that can't be an oversight. I can't imagine that's an oversight. And now, as soon as we pass that bill, Robert Mojica, the budget director, comes out and says, well, we were going to take care of that in the 30-day amendments. Well, if you had enough time in your State of the State and your budget analysis to complain about the loss of these deductions by the federal tax return, I would think, I would think you would realize that we got to correct that before it affects the state taxpayers on their state tax return. So again, an issue of credibility, but an issue of whether or not he's doing what he can do to blunt the loss of deductions in the state of New York.
So, Senator John DeFrancisco, let me ask you this. What separates you, I think this is a fair question, from the other Republican candidates, Brian Kolb or Joel Giambra?
Well, first of all, the committee people will have to make that decision. But I think if you look at my record as far as what I've done, the leadership positions I've taken, whether it was the president of the school board, whether it was the president of the city council, whether it was a national trustee for the Leukemia Society, and there's many, many others, I've had leadership positions. I played baseball at Syracuse University. I was the captain of my baseball team. People think that I'm a leader and that I think I've proven that over time. That's number one. Number two, the only way, Andrew Cuomo he has the same last name as Mario, but he's a totally different human being. The only way you can go after someone like Andrew in a campaign and try to be effective to win it is that you've got to go right at him as strong as he comes after you. And you've got to be able to respond to every single issue and respond in an articulate way to every issue to show that the issues were different on the issues, and maybe the new issue, the new perspective on the issues is something that is better than someone who's just going to bowl you over with either comments by his minions that are negative, or by belittling you in some way, or by taking away one thing that you're entitled to, but he could hold it up in the budget, that sort of thing. So you need somebody who's aggressive, that's articulate, that has the ability to go face-to-face. And I think of the three candidates, everyone has their own pros and cons. I think of the three candidates, I think I have the upper hand on that particular point.
I'm glad you brought up the hair issue, because his guy, as a party, who I have to say was once my student, you said some terrible things about your hair, your receding hairline. What's that about? I mean, what kind of rhetoric is that?
Well, two things. First of all, don't blame yourself for one bad student. You had a lot of other successful ones. But what it's about is two things. Number one is when you make a logical argument to the governor, the normal response of most human beings, if they want to prove their point, would be to respond in some way that shows that you're logically wrong. The way the governor responds, well, first of all, he doesn't respond. He has the various minions throw out tweets or throw out news releases or whatever, never respond to the question, but be personal, derogatory, and the like. So that's the governor's doing it because, once again, he's a micromanager. He's not going to let somebody do that unless he wants them to do
Absolutely.
That. Number two, if somebody like that is working for me and makes comments like that, unprofessional comments, to someone who's going to be in a race, that person wouldn't be working for me anymore. And the fact that he hasn't been fired is, again, shows that that's something the governor wants to do. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to talk about the issues, and he can respond any way he wants to, as can his minions.
Okay, so here is a substantive question. New York State, we all know, is at least $4.5 billion in the hole. You were the governor. What would you do about that $4.5 billion?
The two main items. First of all, you have to evaluate every single program and get rid of programs that are not effective anymore. Secondly, the two biggest budget items by far, the vast majority of the budget dollars go to education and health care. One third of the people in the state of New York, one third are entitled to Medicaid. One third. You look at other states, it's nowhere near that. Medicaid was supposed to be a hand up for various people that are poor or disabled or have certain conditions that they need help and they can't handle on themselves. We have to look, if you're going to make meaningful reform and meaningful changes to the amount of money we spend in the state of New York, that's got to be looked at. As well as there's various federal government provides certain requirements for Medicaid, but then they provide things, they say that these are optional coverages, and those optional coverages you don't have to do. Other states don't do those. So,
John, let me stop you and say a lot of people are in nursing homes because of Medicaid being kept there. Would you take that support away?
I would look at exactly why they're in Medicaid, whether or not they can afford it, independently and not being on Medicaid, and what rules changes should be done if in order to be more consistent with other states. I wouldn't rule anything out. When you're in a situation where pretty soon you might have not enough taxpayers who pay taxes to support the programs that you are providing now, you're going to have to do this eventually to try to put your budget in order. So why not stem the tide of people leaving and do it now? And it may be some problems for some people, but we've got to be more in line. We shouldn't be paying more in Medicaid cost than the both states of Texas and Florida combined. It just doesn't make sense.
Got it.
As far as education.
Got it. John, I just want to, because we only got about 6 minutes left, I want to hit on a couple of other points, if I may. The first of them is ethics reform. A lot of people think that there are real ethics problems in New York State government, in the governor's office, and in the legislature, certainly. You've been around for a long time. What would you do to clean things up?
Well, what's going on right now, I think, is doing more to clean things up than anything else, namely enforcement of the rules that are on the books. And making sure that there's an aggressive enforcement of ethics rules and regulations. Everyone, you know, think about it. Over the last few years, both the majority leader of the Senate, the Speaker of the Assembly, and people close to the governor are under indictment and being tried, let alone many other legislators. That shows that there are rules on the books that can be enforced if the enforcement authorities are willing to take that on. There should be more aggressive ethics hearings. Maybe they should be public hearings If someone is being accused of some type of ethical misconduct and they're a member of the legislature, and not just if the remedy shouldn't be just remove them as a committee head, there should be serious discussion, if it's serious enough, to remove them from the legislative body. And that happens very, very infrequently. So I don't think if you've got corrupt people, if you've got people, there are corrupt people everywhere in every profession. If you've got corrupt people, the best way for those others that might consider that is to have examples like we're seeing over this last few years, active enforcement, people having their lives changed to the negative once they're caught and once they're prosecuted. I think that, to me, is the most effective way. You can make every rule, any rule that you want to make, but the fact of the matter is if someone is not going to follow the first rule, they're not going to follow the second, third, and fourth rule. You just have to enforce those that are on the books.
I want to go very quickly because we're really running out of time here. First of all, I want to ask you about the so-called IDC, which is the Independent Democratic Conference, which has made common cause with your conference, and it's partly why you're still in power. Is this correct, or is it, can you give us an insight into how this is all working?
Well, first of all, there's 31 Republicans and one Democrat. The conference is what, Simca Felder, so that's a majority.
Yep.
But the independents provide a buffer when someone's not in a session day, another vote that might be necessary, but it benefits them as well in that some legislation that the Republicans never would have put on, it comes on the legislation because of the efforts of the independent Democratic Conference.
For example,
it's working as far as I'm concerned. And I think the most important thing, you got to realize what created the Independent Democratic Conference. In 2009, 2010, the Democrats took over the state Senate. They had the Senate, the Assembly, and the governor's position. And those 2 years, there was increased spending by $10 billion in 2 years and increased taxes by $10 billion. And it was a very, very bad period of time. The independent Democrats decided they didn't want to be part of that any longer. And Jeff Klein formed a small group that later became larger. And so it's they're representing their constituents. They got to decide how best to represent them. And if they could get in a position to be able to do things that are effective for their district, that's up to them how they handle it. But that's how they were created.
John, we only have 2 minutes left. I know I interrupted you before when you were talking about expenditures. You talked about Medicaid. Talk to us a little bit about education.
Well, education, I've sort of coined the phrase that we've got to unshackle our teachers. Education, we're spending a lot of money on education, and many people don't think the results are as good as they should be. But we are now, we've got so many regulations that have things that have to be done in the schools, in how teachers are evaluated and all of that. The fact of the matter is the principal in every school district should be able to figure out who the good teachers and the bad teachers are without requiring all different administrative stuff that the teacher has to do besides teaching. And even a more so we've got to look at those rules, get rid of those regulations, let the teachers teach, and you got to enforce discipline in the schools so they can teach, not have years and years of disciplinary hearings for some teachers who are sitting in a rubber room and collecting a paycheck, doing nothing. Even maybe a little bit radical, but what is the purpose of the Board of Regents? The Board of Regents is another layer of government. Most states don't have anything like it. Their main function is ask for more money every year when the budget's being created. And the second part that they do is they create regulations.
Okay, so are you I'm sorry, John. Are you calling for the abolition of the Board of Regents?
Yes. I'd have to research it, make sure I'm not missing anything, of course. But we've got to look at things as basic as that. What agencies are really outlived their usefulness? And why do we provide money for an organization to create more regulations when we've got an entire Department of Education? So everything would be up for review in my mind, because the alternative is New York remains unaffordable and gets more and more unaffordable, and we have less and less taxpayers. Then these things are going to have to go anyway, because there definitely won't be enough taxes to pay for these things once we keep losing our population.
John, thank you for that. Our guest has been New York State Deputy Senate Majority Leader and newly declared Republican candidate for governor, John DeFrancisco. John, thank you so much for being with us.
And thank you for having me. I look forward to being on as many times as you'd like.